Welcome back to season two of the podcast, where we're having candid conversations, open, honest, vulnerable conversations from people, friends, and clients that I admire. Our intention here is to educate and empower you. We are unscripted, we are live, and today we're diving in with my friend Christine. Hello.
Hello.
So I always like starting each of these episodes with having you just maybe say a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk about how we know each other.
Sounds good. So I'm Christine. I am from Philadelphia area out here in Pennsylvania. I am a licensed social worker, 28 years old. I'm not really sure what else you want to know. I work with kids from what, kindergarten to 12th grade. And I really enjoy my work. A lot of it is kind of who I am.
Yeah, I love your work. I am so inspired and admired your work so much. It's incredible what you do.
Thank you. I was gonna say, I do a lot with what behavioral and emotional needs. Some of it's therapy, but a lot of it's crisis de-escalation. I know I've talked to you about it a lot, but just being able to be there while they're in that vulnerable position, and being able to support them and hopefully coach them through whatever they're struggling with. And there are a lot of times where the kids go through things much more vulnerably than adults. So it's always so interesting to see the connection, especially when you and I end up talking. A lot of the lessons I teach them, I'm like, why don't we do this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how we know each other, because I already am like, let's dive into more about your profession, because it should be shared.
No,
I'm
it's
gonna shit on us. But yeah, so do you wanna start with how we know each other?
I'll start and then add in as you think fit. I
Okay.
think we did the math already. Was that 2006? Nope, 2000. Yeah, 2016. February of 2016. Why does that date come up?
What? That is not true.
No?
Oh wait,
Wait.
maybe actually that was the time when we could, because we got to know
Connect,
each other
yes.
connected
So
when I
that,
was
yes. So if I'll work my regulation,
Yes.
but I believe it was, yeah, I think it was like somewhere February 2016-ish. Because you were a part of Beachbody at that time, right?
Yes, I was.
And then so was a friend of mine from high school, Liz.
Yep. Still
We're a
talk
part
to
of
Liz. Shout
Beachbody.
out to Liz if she's listening.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, hey Liz. And then I don't think we actually met in person until 2017. Is that correct? Or
Yes.
like summer.
Yep.
Okay.
Wow, I love it. I've never met somebody else that has the same timeline brain as me. This is great.
Dates matter a lot to me. They just happen and stick. But yeah, so we went through Beachbody because you were coaching with a friend of mine from high school. And I did a few of those, like, what are those? Like the challenge
Yep,
group
challenge.
monthly. Yeah,
Yeah,
the.
challenge group.
Yep. So I did a few of those with you. And then I'm pretty sure we just kind of like started following each other on Instagram.
Yep.
And then I don't really remember too much until I know you had to come out to Philly, and Liz was working for the one day. So you asked if anybody was in town and around, and I said I was. But
Yes.
I'm like, I don't know if it's much more than that.
No, that's basically it. But I just love this story so much. Yeah, so I went out to in 2017. It was my first year ever going out there to work at the retreat center. And I decided I was working pretty closely with Liz in the Beachbody stuff. And so she invited me. I don't know if she invited me or how that came to be, but I went over to her and stayed with her for that weekend. And yeah, she ended up having to work so much, and it was so kind. She was like, you have the whole basement of my house, here's my car, like, I'm sorry I can't be with you, but like, please go out and do stuff. And that's when
Right.
I was like, well, I guess I'm just gonna like post on Instagram like who lives in Philly and wants to do something, because I'd never been to the East Coast or
Yeah.
anything like that. And you were like, I'm free. And I was like, yes. I remember you telling me that you like kind of lied to your family, because you're like, it's still weird to like say that I'm meeting up with someone online,
Yes.
which I totally get.
I didn't know how to tell them, like, I'm hanging out with a friend that I've never met before.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I picked you up and we drove to Philly together.
Yeah, because how far was that drive? It was just outside of Philly, right?
I think it was like a 45-minute drive.
Yeah.
Finding parking took a little bit of time.
Right. Oh, here it comes. We were in the center city.
You're in center city, yeah.
I have a dyslexic brain, so I always have to like really take too long to think about how to say it. But yeah,
you call it city center.
City center on the west coast, center city on the east.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. There we go. I'm glad we got that out of the way. The debate of our friendship.
Well, it comes up every time we talk.
It's true.
But yeah, we went to the what is it? The Muter Museum.
Yes, the Muter Museum.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was. I've never been, and I've lived by it for so long. It was fascinating.
I'm pulling it up because I can never remember specifically what it is, like how to explain it. But you did last time I asked you. Do you remember off the top of your head?
It's a doctor museum. No, I know it's, he was a physician, if I remember correctly. So a lot of the artifacts there were related to the body and organs and things along the lines of that. There was a whole like section on abnormalities as well.
Yeah, that was like the most fascinating part. Yes, here it is. Mm-hmm. An extensive archive of past and permanent exhibitions. We invite you to explore our world and become disturbingly informed is the what it says about
it. I would say I was exactly that.
Yeah, so it was so fascinating. It had there. I remember like all these crazy tumors that have been extracted from human bodies that had grown like hair and teeth and all this.
Yeah.
And then the tallest human skeleton ever was there, which was giant.
Yeah. What and real, cool. Like it wasn't just fake.
Right. Yeah.
I like was mind boggled. Was everything was so like was real. Nothing was wax made or anything.
Yeah. It really, that just was like a whole mind fuck for me too. Cause it really felt like walking into like a Halloween place, yeah. But everything was real.
Yeah. Yes. And it was from such a medical perspective.
Yeah. Which is why I loved it so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you get a chance, absolutely go out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we went to that arboretum, which was not an arboretum.
Yeah, we did. That was so confusing. I'm still baffled.
Yeah. It said arboretum and we showed up and it was what, just like a field. And like, that was like, it was just weird. I was like, are we just driving through someone's lawn?
Yeah. Yeah. It was bizarre. There was that house that was there that I remember walking around in the house, but it wasn't like, I mean, houses aren't arboretums. So. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. We've had so many really great memories together. Oh, I just, yeah. And now, so we have a tradition now, every time that I come out, every time I stay with you, at least yes. We've done it twice now. We have done it twice.
Well, you've been what, 4 times? So that's like 50% right now.
That's 50%. Next year that will have increased, right?
Yes, exactly.
I want to hear more about your profession. Do you mind talking about that a little bit more?
No, not at all.
I mean, I know I pick your brain about it 24/7 when we're together.
It's a lot of who I am. So
yeah. Tell us more, like, how did you get into that? And maybe even, yeah, how you got into it and then where you were when we met, like in your professional process.
Sure. So, when I was actually in undergrad, I went to Westchester University, go Rams. I was actually in school for physical therapy. And then I ended up dual degreeing with psychology. And then when I had to go do my internship for physical therapy, I decided I didn't want to do it. So 4 or 5 months before graduation, I dropped that major and was just in psych. So they set me up with an internship and said, there you go. And I showed up and it was with preschoolers, it was like a hospitalization, program for them during the day. So when they were getting kicked out of preschool for their behaviors, they came to us. Mm. And I didn't even know that I wanted to be around kids. And I showed up and they were crawling on me and they were hitting each other. And I just remember being like getting home and being like, they fell off.
Wait, say that one more time. You may have cut out.
They had a lot of germs.
Yeah.
It was gross. I ended up loving it. Just that crisis, being able to help them manage what they were feeling and teaching them to communicate that to others. So I worked there. After graduation, I worked with adolescents in a residential program. They were what, 13 to 21 teen girls from Philadelphia. So while I am somewhat from Philadelphia, it is still not the, I don't have the same dialect as Philadelphia per se. For those of you who can't see me, I am very white. I learned a lot of different terms. It was huge learning curve for me. I was literally the only white person in the entire building, including staff and workers. So it was just huge learning curve. It was really that connection that how they fight and stand up for themselves is a survival skill, and not necessarily always a psychological issue. So it was really like the first time I had to like learn to balance, like I am coming in here to treat like mental health, but there's also that other side of, I can't neglect who you are from before.
Yeah.
Environment I'm going to send most of them back to as well. So that one was really challenging. I ended up then moving out to Lancaster, PA. And when I moved out here, I got a position. It was another hospitalization program during the day I did kindergarten through 12th for them as well. The itty bitties who were five all the way up to our 12th graders who were around 17, 18, depending. And it was heavily focused on the mental health. A lot of it focused on depression, anxiety, self-harm, suicidal ideations, that type of realm. And I worked with a bunch of great staff there to do social skills, learn all of that. And I'm trying to think, that was 2015. So okay. I met you, I just started, so I was doing that full time during the day, and then on weekends I was doing the night.
Okay, we cut out for a second, but you were saying that it was 2015, we met in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was working the full-time job during the day with the students, with the kids and teens, and night shift overnight, and I was starting to explore grad school programs at that point. I'm trying to think, I feel like when we talk about like where I was at life and in my profession, I started the Beachbody stuff specifically because I was much heavier than I wanted to be. And I was getting out of a relationship that really like completely wrecked me mentally. Mm. So I was like in a new town. I loved what I was doing and it was the reason I was staying, but I literally had nothing else other than my job. So when I met you and like started those groups, it was very much focused on like, okay, well, I need to take care of myself because I haven't been doing that. And I don't really have time, nor do I want to, but it's more that I don't know how to. And I was teaching a lot of like, okay, this is how we manage our emotions and this is what we do about them. But obviously there's a difference between like actually doing it and teaching.
Yeah, right.
But it's so much harder as an adult. And that was the first time I was like actually out on my own. I left home around, I was 18 when I went to college and I didn't move home after that. So I've always been like an adult.
With air quotes.
There. But even now there's just some things that I'm not sure I'm really an adult about. But specifically at that time, it was like a panic of transition. And just kind of navigating what does an adult actually need to live. And mentally I was just like, I felt like I was just doing work and didn't have anything that I enjoyed anymore. Especially I've always been on a team of some sort. I've always been always trying to accomplish some type of goal, whether it's a running goal or a fitness goal. And during the relationship I was in, I kind of lost that. There's no way I was getting back on track like that by myself. In all honesty.
I love the honesty.
So I joined that. And like I said, we just kind of kept in touch. So I kept in touch with you mostly through my grad school, which was 2016, 2017, and 2018, which was such a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, a lot of professionally, a lot of significant growths, and even being a better clinician to be able to understand people better and help them learn about themselves. But again, I don't necessarily, do as I say, not as I, or do as I say, not as I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that follow through is hard. So can you, let's talk more about that. Would you say that was kind of like your jumping off point on like your self-care quest? I like that, like, you realize you don't know how to take care of yourself and you're like, I'm going to fucking set out to do that shit.
Yes. Well, yeah, because so that was spring. So I started grad school that summer. Okay. And that fall, I was a mess. I was working full-time hours on the weekends at one job. I was doing part-time hours at my internship, and then I was taking 4 grad classes. So it was a lot. And I was at that point of like, I wasn't happy with who I was. I was still mentally kind of trying to get my feet again from the last stuff. But really, like, even just weight wise, like, I just wasn't comfortable with my clothes, and even just that self-esteem, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
To just constantly feel like I was battling myself and then almost like battling the world because I had to get all of that stuff done, but it was a lot. So yeah, I think that's the first, like, that fall was really when I was like, I can't keep doing this. Especially when I'm showing up at the hospital 40 hours a week still and trying to be like, take care of yourself.
You know, right.
Like, things are going to work out. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm not really sure that's a thing.
So did you feel like this drive to be more authentic and with that?
Yes. So it's interesting because I would say I actually, so yes, but I don't think I understood what that meant until after I graduated.
Okay, yeah, for sure. A lot of times I don't know.
Yeah, so I had the mentality of like being authentic and just, I'm not even sure if that's the right word, but understanding me more. So then I can understand those skills. How do I use them? From a clinician standpoint, there is like the idea of boundaries of like, I am a professional and I'm here more of a sounding board. So there's just a fine line of being authentic clinically that typically is really told that ethically we're not supposed to do that. So I felt like it, I felt like it was very much like, as long as I knew the skills of how to use them, I could be a better teacher. And that was really my focus at the time of like, well, if I'm doing it, I can teach it better rather than explain like, well, I'm here because I've done it too.
Absolutely. And I love that you just kind of found yourself in that place and you're like, oh shit. Like you can see how things necessarily weren't exactly aligning and you wanted to be able to show up fully for the kids that you're working with.
Yeah, exactly. And there are some kids that they do things and I'm like, man, I get it. but again, clinically, I'm not really allowed to say that.
Right. Of course.
But so since I graduated in 2018, so it's been, God, it's been a little over 2 years. I'm still not an adult though. Don't let that fool you.
You know, my social justice teacher, on our call yesterday, I was giving some example and I was like, well, I guess I feel more adult now. And he was like, I'm throwing up the X, no adulting, like never grow up. And I was like, yes, we need more people in our lives that promote that.
Yeah. I just said the other day, like, I still have those moments where I look around for the adult and then realize it's me.
I love that.
Like, so much. I mean, I have full faith in myself, but there are times where I'm like, I don't want to be. Like,
yeah. Well, and I think that's totally part of growing up, but also like even maybe a self-care lifestyle is realizing like, oh shit, like I do actually need to like have some kind of baseline with myself. And especially like establishing trust and like, and it's just like this wormhole of whatever that means to you. It can be trust, boundaries, eating well, feeling better, all of it.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many different areas, and just yeah. because you're stronger than the other doesn't mean you don't have to work on that other piece either.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, since I graduated in 2018, so I transitioned from being in a clinical setting at the hospital to a school. Yeah. And that transition, I felt like really helped me learn to be much more authentically myself.
Ooh, say more about that.
Yeah. And again, like I clinically in the setting, I'm not being like, well, so I've been there and this is what my past has been, but it is so much more easy to have those conversations and like physically work through the issue with the student of like, okay, you need to take deep breaths. I'm here. Let's take deep breaths together. Like having those conversations of like, well, I've been in this situation and this is what could help me. Rather than like, well, do you remember last session when we met? it just feels so less medical. It's just much more of like that transference of skills, which I think is much more important than just being a soundboard for most of these kids. I think they need that soundboard too, but a lot of the times they need that after. So once they release their anger, once they get it all out there and they're screaming and yelling, then they tell someone how they're feeling, but they still need that guidance on what next.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest piece.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about my job. And then I like have to remind myself that like, if you give them grace to learn that what's next, like almost taking that piece of nugget to my personal life of like, there's always going to be a what's next. How are you going to teach them to get through it? So then how are you getting through it? Especially with the lovely world we live in right now, the what next is changing by the minute for us.
Yeah. Can you give any like tips or like what exactly is that? Like, what is the what's next support? Is it the deep breaths or...
Having a plan.
Okay. Yeah.
It's kind of just grace with yourself, right? Understanding that, you can have all the plans in the world, but you're not always going to be able to follow them. So what is the plan of support? It's not that I hate body scans, but it's just not the same for everybody. So I tell people it's like a body check. So are you checking in mentally with yourself? Do I need to check in with those thoughts? And then like, okay, am I physically okay? And that's really looking at when you think of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the basic needs, like, okay, am I safe? Am I fed? Am I watered? all of those like basic needs, and really checking in with ourselves first about all of that. Because that's the things that while we can't control any of them right now, those are the things we can advocate for help. Constantly change, your thoughts constantly change, medical things keep changing. I feel like our kids some days have insurance and some days they don't. I think even right now, sometimes everything's open and tomorrow everything might be closed.
Yeah. Oh my God. Pandemic 2020.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Or, you know, if one day I'm telling them they're coming to school and then they're not coming to school.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's such a big one right now.
Yeah. And like, I know for me personally, I really like routine. I like consistency.
Right. And we talked in our friendship about how that's so important for people with anxiety and people that have dealt with trauma and things like that.
Yeah. And like, right now with the pandemic, I see a lot of our kids that unknown is really causing a lot of turmoil. That like I tell them to just focus on those basic needs as best as you can. And then let's talk about what can we do to get out of our head, right? What is in their control? My personal favorite right now has been porch parties. I have been scheduling porch parties with our kids, and I literally go to their porch and we dance on their porch for an extended period of time. We're on the sidewalk, whatever they have.
Yes.
The one kid is next to a parking lot, so we had a parking lot party.
Hell yeah, that is phenomenal.
Yeah, but I tell them like that's the like it's always the silver lining, right? Like, I wouldn't get out in their community as much as I do now. Typically, I'm in the building with them, so I wouldn't go to their house.
Right.
Or at least not as often as I do. I have. But so it's just kind of like explaining to them there's always going to be things that are out of our control, but what can we control? Is it that 15 minutes of dancing? Is it that shower we can get at this time?
Mm. You know,
we do like brain breaks. So I kind of always check in with them when I come in for their brain breaks on our virtual learning platform. And I'm like, all right, what do you need right now for yourself? Right. And giving the younger kids and even the older kids that ability to verbalize what they need. It's yeah. what I'm like, I didn't learn that until a few years ago.
Like, right. Seriously. That just gave me chills. Yes. Like,
yeah.
That is such an important skill to hand over to a kid. And
yeah.
That self-awareness and like, oh yeah, my needs do matter. And I have right. an opportunity to check in with them myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's wow. been like, talk about that authentic self. I would say having to model that with the students has been probably like the hardest thing that I have learned.
Yeah.
'Cause I've always been like, okay, I have to be clinical. I can't see like, I really can't show that emotion. Whereas in the school setting, it's been like, okay, I'm feeling frustrated and I need to go take a deep breath. Like, I am not angry at you. I'm frustrated at the situation. I need to go do this for myself.
Mm.
It's a skill that I've never really had, but I'm always teaching it, right?
Yeah.
So I was able to start modeling it. It was like, oh, I was learning the skill too. So then I can be better at teaching them.
Well, and I think that's amazing. Can we talk a little bit more about like this clinical setting? Because what I'm hearing at least is that it sounds like it's a lot more impactful on the recipient, whether it's a child or not, to feel that connection, like not only to witness like your practitioner or therapist or social worker doing these skills that they're being taught, but also to hear like, I've been there, I know what you're going through. And to think that that's like, quote, not professional. Like, do you want to speak to that at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I struggle with still, because ethically with my license, I abide by our 9 competencies, which I heavily believe in those competencies. The one that I always, and I think across the board, most people can say this, is that ethical standards of ethical boundaries. And in a medical profession, not all medical professions, but the experiences I have had have very much been that I'm the professional, you are not. It's not, I want to say, and I feel like we've talked about this with doctors, it's almost that like removed emotion. It's like very much textbook. Like, I'm going to sit in an office and you're going to tell me everything that's wrong with you and I'm going to prescribe you meds. Yeah. You're going to sit there and tell me everything in the office and I'm going to tell you, here is the intervention I can give you. These are the skills. Mm-hmm. You practice them, get back to me, and then we'll process. And processing is not bad. That's not my strength.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. I work at our behavioral health hospital with our adults too. And I have had, I talked to the adults and I feel like you and I talked about this maybe this past summer. I don't think it was the summer before, but how like you guys, people might not like their therapist and say therapy isn't for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, what do you want from a therapist? Like, when you go to therapy, what are you looking for? And then when you think about all the therapists you have, do they match that? And I tell people, like, I don't go to a therapist to process. I don't need that. I can process them myself all up here. It's what do I do next that I struggle with, right? I have people yeah. who are like, I just want coping skills. I'm like, okay, then you shouldn't be going to a therapist who's processing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and you have that right to say, this isn't like, we're not a match.
A good reminder.
Yeah. And I don't think that's like, a negative on any type of intervention or therapeutic intervention that people are, providing or service.
Mm-hmm.
We all need something different.
It's honoring the individual.
Yes, exactly. Like, I know my feelings. I can tell you exactly who, what, when, where, and why. It is what is next that I struggle with, but I have people who can't even identify feelings, you know? So
yeah, absolutely.
It depends on where you're at in your process. And I've even seen it where individuals have had different therapists that at different stages of their life, it meshed better. And that's okay too, but it's being able to advocate for yourself. And is it better to have someone who is more authentic? who is more willing to be like, okay, that happens. When I'm at the hospital with adults and we do talk about skills, I end every session with them like, okay, so are you going to do that?
I love it. Yes.
You're in the headlights. Yeah, I told you this. And like, I started doing it because it was one of those groups where like everyone just seemed to get it. And I was like, okay, not for nothing, but like, this isn't something I just like read and was like, yep, get it.
Right.
And since then I've always ended my groups with that because it's like deer in the headlights of like, I feel like they have to say yes, but they're not really sure they're going to do it. And yeah. I tell them, like, okay, so if you're thinking in your head, you're not, what are the barriers? Like, what is causing you not to do it? And I feel like even that piece of authenticity is just being able to recognize like we're human and you're not going to do all these skills.
Yeah.
Again, I think that is some clinicians I know are very hard on that, like oversteps boundaries. I have others who don't feel that way. So I think it just depends on, again, personality, setting, what the end goal is.
Yeah.
But I'm very much skill oriented. And if you're not going to do it, then you just like, I wasted your and my time. And if it's something you want to do, but you still have all those barriers, let's talk through.
I think that's the key to follow through. I've literally done that with every client I've ever worked with, especially when it came to personal training. I'm like, okay, cool. You can show up. I'll kick your ass. But like, I always worked with people to implement programs that they could take and do on their own. It was actually like the training style of the little gym that I worked at. So you couldn't work with a personal trainer multiple times a week. You could come and get a program and then rework with them like 5 weeks later.
Oh, so, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
so, again, it's that transference of skills. Like,
exactly.
I want you to be successful on your own.
Yes.
I'm not sure how you guys do it in the fitness world. When I'm at the hospital and they get discharged, or since I'm not consistently there every day, I always tell them, like, if you guys are here when I'm back next, I can't wait to see you. However, if you're not, best wishes. I hope to never see you again.
Which
and, like, everyone, like, always laughs, and I was like, nah, because I don't love you, but...
I seriously, like, I hear your work stories and just about you in your profession. I just know that you are amazing out there, like changing so many lives. And people are like, that person, that social worker, that day at the hospital was like amazing.
Yeah. And I, you know, and I really appreciate you saying that. And my thought is they don't even need to remember me or the lesson. It's, did they take that information and use it?
No.
They get acknowledged that yes, the barriers they have, they're human.
Yeah.
You know, when I talk, we talk about triggers and warning signs and, you know, all those buzzwords.
Right. But
today I'm like, we can use all these words and I can write it on paper and you can give it to your support person. But if you don't know what that looks like of how to actually use it, doesn't really matter per se.
Well, exactly. That's not how we change the world and actually shift our shit. Otherwise.
Yes, like, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you talk about even self-care, and I know for a fact it wasn't this summer. I think it was the summer before that we had the conversation about self-care and the idea of like people perceive self-care as always taking a bubble bath once a week and going to the spa and getting their nails done. And
right.
I work with a lot of individuals who have high psychosis. They are significantly depressed. You know, it's been more of that chronic type stuff, and you look at them and you're like, make sure you take a bubble bath once a week.
Like, yeah, right.
But that's like mainstream media, you know, and it's like, oh, I made sure to light the candle, and I'm like, hey, did you guys remember to shower this week?
Yes. And that is the importance, because seriously, like, when you are sunk in your bed due to depression, like, you are not gonna, I barely shower enough to begin with. I'm not getting out of bed to treat myself to a bubble bath. Like, no.
Yes, exactly. But that's exactly it. And like, we talk about the, is it what, the comparison trap? I feel like you might know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That like, that's what social media is doing. And it's so concerning when I, even just me as a human being, see that stuff. I'm like, man, I'm really failing. Like, I'm really not taking care of myself, but I thought I was. But then there are those days that I'm like, okay, I got in bed and I showered. I did it today.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like that we need to normalize more.
Big time.
It looks different, you know? self-care can literally just be taking those deep breaths. But it also should be something more sustainable of, is this helping long-term? I talk to people of like, well, we use a whole like gas tank analogy for like self-care and stuff. But essentially, like when you think about a car running out of gas, that's like you're running out of energy or the ability to cope.
Yeah.
The gas itself is the coping skills, but you have to fill up the gas tank somehow. And filling up the gas tank is that big truck that comes, but that's really your self-care, right?
Like that. I love metaphors. I'm all about this.
I know. When I show it on the board, people start looking at me like, you up there. And I'm like, no, did you follow the story? And people are like, yeah. I'm like, that's all that matters. Anytime I write on the board, I'm like, this is so I remember what we talked about. You don't need to follow the board. Just follow the story. Yeah, we talk about triggers being like potholes in the road.
Wow.
And then gauge, it's either, well, we have F and E. E is for emergency and F is for feeling better.
This is just incredible. I'm yeah.
And then that gas gauge is like, you know, your warning signs, right? When does the light go off that you need to refuel?
Warning signs. Like
at the hospital, we use a scale of 1 to 10. I tell people that whatever they're feeling better doesn't always have to be a zero. I feel like you and I have talked about it. Everybody's baseline is different. Some of us aren't going to fully get rid of whatever our diagnosis is or whatever our symptoms and signs are.
Right. Yeah. I think that's really important to acknowledge. Like everybody's baseline looks different. Everybody's mm-hmm. self-care looks different because everybody's life is different.
Right. Well, and again, the amount of times I tell people like, cause I put boxes of like, okay, 10 is the empty. That's the emergency. That there's no way around that. Yeah. Then I try to get them to understand, okay, so what is feeling better? And again, it's when I ask them like, so what number is that? And everyone's like zero. And I'm like, oh, so all 35 of you in this room right now, you know, like everybody is at zero when they are feeling their greatest. And there's so many people that are like, yeah, but I don't know when I've ever felt that. And I'm like, okay, so then why are we going to try to achieve something that's never happened?
Wow. Look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's that, I would have never realized that because textbook tells me they need to be at zero. And
dang.
Approach it as a textbook. It becomes so much less invaluable in my opinion.
What I'm hearing really coming up is that support and community are essential to, what are you giggling about?
You know, those are my community is my buzzword.
Oh, yes.
So just for other people, I'm actually in my second master's program. I have 3 classes left.
Wow.
But yeah, it's all about restorative practices and creating that community and connection.
I'm so proud of you.
I know. But yeah, no, that's exactly it. I think for more reasons than one, not just self-care, not just for mental health, but even just the idea of it takes a village to raise somebody, somebody, whether we're adults or not. So why are we not creating that village as we get older?
So. Man, I'm just like sitting in that for a second. Because I think it's so true. And it's especially true. It's just like this fucked up game of capitalism where it's like everybody for themselves and you're out here being independent and you're supposed to like, what? Just like be self-made and make all this money and like be out here alone at the top, quote unquote, you know, everybody raps about that. I'm out here at the top.
Yeah.
And it's like that. Well, first of all, that's not possible. And it's literally like, you don't make it anywhere without anyone else because that's how the world operates. Like there's always going to be a teacher, a person, like something mm-hmm. that helped you get along. And also like when you come back down to like the very basic levels of society, like, yeah, people are, it's like the village, the community, people are mm-hmm. supporting one another. And it's more important than ever. I feel like when we really get back, especially to like minority communities mm-hmm. to focus on that shit. Like, I feel like it's just like such a gross, rich, single white person, or like maybe I'll just say even old white man thing to be like, yeah. I don't know. And I'm just like, we need community and support. Mm-hmm. And do you think the world's waking up to that, or like what?
I want to hope so.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think yet, unfortunately. Maybe it's just me being a pessimist, which typically I'm not.
A pessimist.
But yeah, I just, no, I don't think so. I think there are pockets of people who are waking up to that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are pockets of people who want to be on the bandwagon while it's hyped, but not mid afterwards.
If that makes understand sense. The full follow through that it takes.
Yeah, like, because I think about everything back in what that was, May, June, July. I mean, even now, all of it.
Oh, went, of 2020.
Yeah, 2020 as a whole. Because even like we've talked very recently, we've had conversations in my building about that social injustice with healthcare right now.
Yeah.
How all of our suburban schools are back in and our inner city schools are not. How open up next week. Kids come back tomorrow, actually.
Wait, like, say that again?
My kiddos come back tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed it all goes well.
Yes, yes.
But the issue is if they go home with any symptoms, they have to come back with a doctor's note. Most of my kids don't have insurance. Most of my kids can't have access to a doctor. Urgent cares are super expensive. It's like $75, $80. And then you have to consider bus routes to get there and all of that.
This is really important.
14 days. Yeah, they're just going to wait the 14 days. So like when I think about people being on the bandwagon, it's really like 2020 as a whole has really highlighted these injustices. And I feel like in pockets, people are like, okay, we need to take care of each other. We need to do something. And while they're very loud and vocal, you get those other people that are like, yeah. And then they simmer off.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Probably people that aren't living these lives and don't understand.
Right. And there are people who are still learning. And I feel like there are people who are learning and trying to figure out where their place is in creating this community and like the shift of everything. But I don't feel like those pockets are big enough yet to actually make a difference. And again, I'm not trying to be pessimistic.
No, I love that you're just being really realistic. Do you find that this is where your hope kind of comes from? Are these pockets and seeing them grow? Or where do you find your hope?
I mean, most days it's not there. No.
Oh my gosh. Don't
I'm just
even.
Kidding. I mean, I've had those. That's the thing. I have full transparency here. I have those days that it's just not there.
Yeah.
But I that's- do... When I get out of my own way and out of my own head and do see and connect with these pockets, it's totally possible. And that is kind of seeing that out of my building, what there's like 35 staff members, and out of the 35 of us, seeing that 20 of us are ready for these kids to come back and have been connecting with parents of what can we do to make you feel the safest? You know, that pocket of people makes me be like, okay, we are truly here to protect the kids, whatever that means, because information and protocols are literally changing by the minute that I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
But being able to connect with families and be like, okay, we're going to try, like, help us, like, support you best, you know? And then we have what the other 15 who are just kind of like, nope, not going to work. Can't do this. And again, everybody has their own right, their own beliefs, as well as their own, families to worry about. I always say,
yeah.
I was lucky in a sense. I live by myself. I don't live close enough to my family members to see them consistently. That for me to go into a school building with a bunch of kids who could potentially get me to be positive, it doesn't really like wreck my world because I'm not going to pass it off to my parents. I just haven't seen them.
Yeah.
So I come from a place of privilege in this realm as well. But
I just want to point out real quick that you're also using your privilege responsibly because you're taking the risk of being positive to go in to the schools to have porch parties and parking lot parties and put yourself out there to make a difference in your community and be with these kids.
Yeah. And I see that again in pockets throughout our district, you know?
Right. Yeah.
There is, and that pocket I would say it gives me hope. I like the idea of, you know, the ripple effect, right? The idea I do something, the next person will. Or if I take two people with me to this porch party or parking lot party, whatever it ends up being, and they enjoy it enough, they go do it with another kid. Or that kid talks to, like, his sibling talks to his teacher and that teacher decides to do it. Like, that to me is how these pockets are going to grow.
Yes.
And I like to think so. It's just, it's also what of that, like 10 steps forward, 5 steps back type mentality too. And that's just nature. That's not
yes
fault. But there are so many changes that have to happen with these pockets on a larger scale that as much as I want it to just be turned over, it's not quite how that works either.
Yeah, it's a slow process. And I think it's learning about like the ripples and really truly knowing how that has an impact. And as we are saying, it doesn't mean that you don't lay in bed sometimes thinking like, holy shit, this isn't possible. The world's going down. Yeah. Like, I mean, like that is very real. Those are the vibes right now. Yeah. And at least like what gets me by is remembering like these little pockets of hope and remembering that like the world has been through some crazy stuff and somehow people always pull together and pull each other up and out. And even if we go down burning, I know that I'll go down burning, still trying to like be together with community. And that is like super empowering.
Yeah, well, and a few things there, but at
yeah,
least
please.
Trying, I agree. But I always think, so first off, when was that? We're October now. I think like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I left you a voice message saying that, like, I'm just done.
Right, yes.
It was that literally, I just, things were changing so fast with our decisions and nobody knew what anything was. And I was getting multiple calls of like, we can't do this. I was like, you're right, we can't.
Yeah.
I can't keep anyone safe. I can't ensure that, you know. And like, we're still failing them because they're not getting the education they want. Mm. And, you know, I place all of that failure on me, which doesn't make sense. So I totally like, I do have those days too. And fall tends to be when I have them more often than not, unfortunately for this time period we're in. But when you said you'll go down trying, I will never forget. I had a friend in college tell me that, you know, I had a lot of mental health is stuff going on, a lot of mood swings, up and down type stuff. And we were talking the one day and she told me, she was like, you know, I feel like I'm at a point where like, yes, you're going to be on the ground and I'm not going to help you up anymore, but I'll lay down with you. And I just remember being like, and like, it's still to this day, I touch base with her all the time. And I'm just like, that to me is probably the most helpful thing you've said was, it's not the matter. Like, it sounds rude that you're not going to help me up, but really it's the idea of like, you're not going to let me just lay there.
Yeah.
Like go down burning and trying. Yes. But we're also probably going down burning with each other.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, I just like got tingles in my body like that. And I think as human beings, like our nature, that's what we really want. We want to know that somebody's going to lay on the fucking ground with us and not just be like, you're a loser, turn on your heel and walk away and you're left alone. That is like what we're made to believe with all these different layers in society. And at the end of the day, you're not alone. You're not alone. Right. You're living on a planet with billions of people.
Well, like, and I think that sometimes when we look at, specifically, I'm going to focus on depression and anxiety.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, but that idea of like, okay, there are how many billions of people on the planet and I'm by myself. Right.
Yeah. I was like reminding myself of that as those words came out of my mouth.
Well, right. And I know you've been there. I've been there. And that idea of there's all of these people and I'm so alone.
Yeah.
Or like when I think about like when she says, okay, help me up. How many times do those people who have depression or anxiety or experiencing those characteristics feel like a burden to that person that someone else is picking them up?
Yeah.
And that's what I think of. Like when I think of, so you either feel completely isolated or you feel like you're a burden. So the idea that someone actively says, I am choosing my time to just lie here with you. Like that's that, okay, there is one person, you know,
and
not necessarily making them do effort because laying there is not technically effort, if that makes sense, but it's that acknowledgement. When I work at the hospital, people tell me like, I just want to be validated. Like they just don't understand that. And I'm like, okay, but do you want to be validated or acknowledged? Like those are two very different things.
Ooh, say the difference.
I don't ever need to be told I'm right, but I need to be told you heard me.
Wow.
And that's I feel like it's one of those where like, cause I mean, I've had plenty of other significant others and that's always the argument is like, you don't understand. And most of the time, like, as I've kind of learned myself more, it's not necessarily that they don't understand. It's that I don't feel like I'm being hurt.
Yeah.
You know, well, like, I want.
Oh.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say that I envision this metaphor, like, from going from what your friend said to you, like, you know, I may not help you off the ground, but I'll lay down there. And I imagine as a depressed person, you're laying on the ground in the world, you're like sinking into the ground and you can't get up and everything is awful. And you have a friend, somebody that's trying to help you, and you already feel so worthless and so miserable. And this person is like, you feel like if you're reaching out for somebody and somebody is going to reach out to you and you touch them, they're going to like melt into the floor too. And they'll suddenly become you. And yeah. It's almost like if somebody offers, from a depressed standpoint, if somebody offers to lay on the ground with me, I'm thinking, I'm almost like, as much as I want you here, like, no, like, save yourself. Like, don't be here. Don't like, let me like bring you into this pity pool. And like, I want the best for you. Just go on without me. That's kind of what it's like.
Yeah.
But to know that there are people out there in the world that are willing to lay down with you and that they can lay down without sinking into the floor. Like, that's something that's, it's like, I mean, especially from a depressed standpoint, that's like mind blowing. You're like, what? This floor is soft for everyone. Like,
well, and cause you even said like, when they want to reach out, and I'm like, well, then you're going to become me. And I'm like, it's not even that. It's like, okay, the darkness is going to swallow you too.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's what I meant.
Yeah. But no, that's exactly it. Like, I'm like, I like, literally you're going to be consumed by this. And I have a friend I was talking to. Typically those days when I feel like I don't have hope right now, I will get a call from him and he's like, so like, if I can feel darkness around me, how are you doing? And I'm like, I'm not. Like,
nah. I'm not doing.
Yeah. Like, it just did not existing.
Yeah.
Most of the time I'm like, I've already been in bed and it's only 5. But yeah, it's that reality that there is darkness and some days it feels so thick. But I don't necessarily need someone to be a flashlight and like, drag me out or carry me out. It's literally, I just need someone to hold my hand in the darkness.
Yes.
And I'm not a huge fan of hand holding, so laying there's enough.
I love that.
But yeah, it's just that idea of like, about community. It's, and on top of community, having, you know, low self-esteem, even not like a huge mental health diagnosis or symptoms and traits, just being, having low self-esteem for whatever reason, thinking about how many other people in the world there are, it's very isolating when you think of how big that number is, you know?
Yeah.
And crushing. Then, yes, it is. Yep. And then looking at like, okay, all of the challenges in the world. And at the end of the day, we all just want to be happy, but I don't know what happy even means. I don't know what it feels like. Can I even do that? Yeah. There are more of those open-ended, what if, why, how type questions that without that community, none of this could have even happened to begin. So when we look at open-ended questions, how do we look at everything else if we don't look at the community that got us here in the first place?
I love that. Yeah, and I feel like I want to be able to like give this clear path to folks. Like, here's the ladder sliding down into the black hole. Like, this is all you have to do. And it's like so much more non-linear, non-direct.
Yeah.
Like, you just, it's like, please just start grasping for tools, start trusting yourself that like the baseline is that, you know, you want something different and fucking fight for that. Just fight for it and you'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree. Like, it's that I can't do it for you, but I can be here to support you. But again, even just that affirming, right? I don't have to, I'm not going to sit here and be like, you're right, you're terrible. But I'm going to be like, I hear that you feel you're terrible, right? Like, I hear you. And I'm here when you're ready to like be accepted, because I want to accept you whether you feel terrible or not.
Yeah. And to be able to say that too, and even say like, I hear that this is how you feel. Like, I hear you saying that. And I want you to know that I don't feel like you are a burden to me right now.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow. I just love these conversations and like the way they swirl around. And
I know, I was thinking, I was like, I'm not even really sure how we started here, but we did.
Yeah, here we are. Do you want to share anything else just in the last few minutes, like about like your self-care path or just like what any of just anything more kind of more directly related to self-care or anything else on your mind? Let's just go with that.
I'm gonna go with yes, just because it came to my mind specifically. Please. So, you know, my self-care path has been up and down just like every other part of my life.
Same.
Yeah, right. Completely honest here. It's that idea of that I'm always trying to take care of myself. Even when I'm not trying, I'm trying, right? I mean, how many times have I laid in bed and I'm like, I should shower? That in my head is trying because I'm acknowledging I should do it.
Yes.
But it's interesting to me because we talk about, okay, it's that daily stuff. It is making sure we shower. You know, making sure that my dishes are done. You know, those basic self-care things, or even when we talk about boundaries of making sure that I can step away when I need to in conversations. But when I think of self-care, I think it's just too ironic not to say it. So I hurt my foot back in August. I think I might have told you this. I'm not sure. But so I rolled my ankle literally the weekend right before you came to visit me back in September. So mind you, about 2 months ago, and I rolled it. I took a day off, and then I just kept going with my life. And I was doing really well with self-care. I was actually feeling like almost on my high horse of I've been doing really good. I've been showering. I've been eating well. Like I was running 3 or 4 times a week. I was lifting 3 times. Oh, I was crushing it. You know, I was doing my rollerblading. Like the list goes on about how, right. Yes. The list goes on with how well I was doing. And then, about 2 weeks ago, I guess it is now, I noticed might have like just not been putting weight on my foot at all. And I went to my physical therapist who I'd like check in with almost monthly anyway. And I was like, hey, could you like fix this? And I like pointed to my foot and he like touched it. I ended up needing to get x-rays.
So wait, hold on. Did it just like are you kind of admitting to slightly dissociating from the pain and you just one day realize like, oh, I'm not even putting weight on this foot?
No, I just don't feel pain.
Oh, like literally or what?
I have a very high pain tolerance. I've broken this foot 2 other times and didn't know it.
Okay. Okay. There's a nice little prereq to the story.
Yeah. So when I told him it was uncomfortable, he touched it and like did some things. And I just kept saying like, that's not cool. If you could like not do that, that would be great. But wow. Like palm everything. He told me to get an x-ray just to get it double checked. And it turns out that I had a stress fracture.
Which is the point right before it breaks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm in a boot, but with that being connected to self-care, it's also recognizing, like, it's not just like making sure I'm showering and eating, because that's great, but it's also making sure that like my body is resting too.
I love the way you say it.
I know. I don't want to acknowledge that out loud because that makes it like now I know it. in my head, I could pretend to like plead innocent, but like, I didn't know. But it's just like, self-care and what that looks like ebbs and flows with what's going on. Like I was much more stressed and a lot higher anxiety during the fall right now. So I was coping with running more, but was I resting enough for increasing all of that activity? I was going to say most likely not. The answer is no.
And clearly, the results are in. It's a full no.
That's exactly what I was going to say, probably not. And then I was like, yeah, that's exactly. It was like a talk show in my head of like, well, now that we've tallied all our votes. but yeah, so now I'm in a boot. I have been in it for, and it's not one of the soft ankle boots. It's literally like full on up my calf type.
Oh, plastic. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so it's like real.
No crutches though? Just the boot?
No, just okay. The boot. Yeah. And I think I'm like on week 2.5 or something. I have like a week and a half left.
Okay.
In my head, I'm going to be fine. But they keep telling me they might extend it depending.
Okay. But it sounds like you're really learning. You're really taking some silver linings here.
I'm trying. Like I said, it's really reminding me of like, okay, like I was doing really well. I felt really strong. But it's one of those where like, I mean, I'm old at some point, if you want to call it that. Your body's going to deteriorate, apparently. But really, well, it's like, oh, go ahead.
No, no, go ahead. Also, what?
It's just the idea of like, as I grow or even day to day, like being able to balance what that self-care looks like. Some day self-care for me is making sure I get out to run. But sometimes that is making sure I take that extra nap. So I feel like when I tell people to do a self-care plan or when I make one myself, it's like almost like, okay, when you're feeling anxious, this is what you need to do. But if you're feeling anxious because of this, this is like, it's almost like so individualized per day, per feeling.
Yeah.
Because that makes it more complicated.
And yeah.
Tells me it's not complicated.
Wait, who tells you that?
Instagram, come on.
Oh, yeah, right.
Isn't it as simple as hashtag self-care?
Self-care Sunday.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, I wish even just when we talk about, like, change, whether it's habits or recovery or whatever that is, it's not linear. Neither is self-care, right?
Yeah. And that's hard. That's hard because we think of things in time and point A to B. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you get outside of those constructs and realize that they literally, I mean, it's kind of scary, but like they don't exist. Like, look it up. It's physics, like time and space.
I don't
are...
like that answer.
I know. I'm sorry. I had to say it.
I know, but you're right. Like, I am a very logistical A, B, C. I really enjoy Google Sheets, Excels, like,
there's a part of me that does.
Like, yeah.
I'm like shifting out of being that person, but I really have been that person for so long. And I love that too. But at first it's scary, but then there's like a release in knowing like, holy shit, this is how life is meant to go. Like, I'm not a failure. I'm not like, yeah, like you're saying, it is 10 steps back and 5 or 10 forward and 5 back, but that it's not a backslide. Like there's no, I mean, that's like the metaphor with the point A to B timeline that our brains understand, but it's all progress.
Yeah. And honestly, I wish I could even remember the song, but it's the, oh my God, Miley Cyrus. She does the shuffle of some sort.
Oh my gosh.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Wish I did. Are you sure it's Miley?
Let me see if I can look it up real quick.
It's not like slide to the left.
Yeah, no, it's the hoedown throwdown. That's what it is.
The hoedown throwdown?
Yes, and in it, it says, oh my God, what is it?
I hope everyone's Googling this
right now.
Side
to side, jump to the left, and then it's like zigzag across the floor, and that's what, and it says shuffle in a diagonal. And literally, that's what I just envisioned when you were talking, like, because that's true. Like, it's not always just a front and a back, right?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Or the right or zigzagging or diagonal, like, and literally as you were talking, that's what I just envisioned me, like, as if I was like on a like a like game board and that's what my person was moving.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like, and I don't like that answer, but then I look at like, okay, what has been so beneficial in just my personal life, but even individuals I've worked with, even like partners and friends and all of that, it's that idea of like, that connection and relationship and support matter so much more than that data point. So much. How many sessions of therapy have you gone to? How many meds have you been taking? How many per day? What's the milligrams? Not that they're not important, but at the end of the day, we're measuring success by something that's qualitative and not quantitative.
Yes. 1000%.
Like, it doesn't matter if I take medicine. It doesn't matter how often I run. Because at the end of the day, I'm not measuring how many times did I run this week. At the end of the week, I'm measuring how am I feeling, right? Yeah. Do I feel supported? And those are things that, again, I don't count that out.
Yeah. Wow. That's such a great perspective too. And just to like, to remember that's the scale the world is living on, are these data points in every aspect, in that. Mm-hmm. Here we are, a little pocket trying to move away from that.
Yeah. And I get it, like, especially when I look at like a grant standpoint of like, why would I give money to something that doesn't show me an outcome? Because it's so subjective to be able to say happiness and success and all of that.
So why are we trying to convince people to invest money when there's no tangible outcome? And it's,
and there's the disruption, like that's capitalism, right? We need to reimagine.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I don't even have an answer. Like it just, I have to evaluate myself every, what, 3 months. I'm like, how am I doing? And what am I achieving? And I'm like, well, my kids are happier. You know, my kids are able to communicate their feelings more. My kids are willing to, or seek like conversations to work through problems. But like, it's so much more than just that tally, you know?
Yeah.
Much more than I met with them to problem solve this many times this month versus this month. Like they're human beings, we all are, right? And it doesn't that count or that quantitative piece doesn't matter as much, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, with like the blade of like but like it's also
right, well yeah correct yeah fortunately because I'm glad that's how we function as humans.
Yes,
because that's not how society is set up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And what I just wanted to loop back around, especially to like your self-care boot story, which is just, I love it. Thank you for sharing that. It also just sounds so much about like learning balance. And I love also what you're saying is like the type of self-care to match your needs and recognizing perhaps I'm going to use you as an example. May I use you as an example? Are you comfortable with that? Thank you. oh my gosh. Now all of a sudden I'm like, oh my gosh, I just like lost my train of thought.
You're going to use me as an example about balance.
Yes, I was. Hold on. Let me just think for a second. Okay. So I'm thinking of trying to match self-care to your needs and using you as the example of perhaps you needed to slow down just a little bit. And, but you've leaned into running and you really love running and that's become like your self-care thing that you do no matter what. And in like, for whatever reason, you weren't able to check in and say like, hey, maybe I actually need to rest. And that just from, I can just see that you're stacking yourself with like being really stressed out and then going into like an even more like a mimicking stress type activity. And that just is persisting. And at the times there are times where like you're angry, you're stressed and you need to get that out. Like that's absolutely a thing, but it's not like 24/7. Like that isn't the only option ever. Like rest is also very viable.
Yeah. And I don't like that answer.
Yes, I know you don't.
No, but that's exactly it. I almost like the emotional and mental stress I go through, I feel like it is easy to alleviate it through physical stress, right?
Yes.
But at some point, like my body as a whole has to actually recover from all three.
Yeah.
And recognizing that is not my strength.
But it's a practice, would you say? Are you working on
trying that? To be in a practice? Can you try to practice? Is that how that works?
Yes, you can. Absolutely. There's like a dedicated practice and then there's like just having a practice. And I think, you know, I love dedicated practitioners and I admire mm-hmm. them so much, but I know that my personality type is just like crunching myself into being like, okay, you got to wake up at 6 a.m. and you're going to do it. And it's like, okay, let's just make it a practice, like a little bit every day or a little bit, a few times, like whatever, you know. Take the dogmatism off of it.
No, I agree. I think, so you came to my gym with me, when you were back here with me in the summer and
Orange Theory.
Yes. Orange Theory.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about this experience.
I love it. I started there with them about a year ago cause they just opened with me or in my area. And, it's such a cool mentality of like, that community atmosphere to really get yourself like motivated to show up. But you're there, you can have that competitive edge of seeing where everybody else is at and wanting to achieve where they're at. But I really look at it as we wear heart rate monitors so I can see if I'm pushing myself or if I'm pushing myself too hard. Because that's the thing more often than not.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
Well, yes, totally candid. I ended up throwing up in the bathroom that morning because I pushed myself way too hard. Gross. And I was fine. It was okay. But right. It's a lesson. And that's part
of it. Well, and that's exactly it. And I feel like it's been a good lesson, kind of even like out of the gym, of being able to regulate how hard I'm going and how hard I'm not. But I've even hit a point that if I'm not enjoying it, I'm not going to do it. So like I go and there are some movements that, first off, I just don't have the coordination for. But then you're adding weights. And if it's too much for me and I'm like, I'm not going to enjoy it, I'm like, okay, what's an alternative, right?
Yeah.
Able to take that like outside of the gym when I think about self-care, of like, if it's not going to work for me, it's okay. And like, I used to have that mentality of, okay, you got to get up at 6 a.m. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to, and like, that's how you achieve your goal. That I used to have the mentality of, if you go to the gym and they're doing a workout, you have to do it all. You have to do it all at your hardest.
Yeah.
And I feel like that takes so much away from the actual self-care piece. If it becomes a demand, if it comes an expectation, it's just hard. Let me say demand. I like the idea of expectation. I prefer expectations over rules. Rules are meant to be broken. but even when it's a demand, like demands are meant to be broken in some capacity, right?
Yeah.
We have autonomy for a reason. So when I think of like that dedicated practice, it is easier to move away from that because it becomes so threatening in my head of like, I have to, and if I don't, I'm failing. And that's, doesn't make it enjoyable.
Yeah. I love that you're able to recognize that and kind of protect that.
Yeah. I'm 28 years old, and I feel like I just learned that in the last year.
Yeah.
And even now, like right now I'm not running. And when they told me I was being in a boot for 2 weeks, my first thought was, I'm not going to be able to move. Like, I'm going to have to watch how I'm eating. I'm not going to like, and it was that like cycle of like, oh my God, this is going to be a problem. And then like, after I thought about it, I'm like, no, you're thinking is the problem.
Yes. Snaps to
like,
that.
Yeah. Like, and it's, but it's so hard to move away from that because
yes,
like I said, I've been in it for about 2.5 weeks now. And I know that, but there have been days where I'm like, God, I could go for ice cream for my second time today because that's my other coping skill. But then I'm like, but I'm not running today. And I try to like move away from that reward mentality. I'm doing well, but now that I'm like forced not to have to, since I can't do anything else, I like realize how much I really still am in that mind frame.
Yeah. And that's important to just, there's so many different lessons and things that come up in life that allow us to notice these things. And again, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or it doesn't say anything about you except that you're learning and noticing.
Right.
And it's okay.
Yeah. And I feel like that's when I, whether we call it trying to practice or practice, I feel like it's like the, this is great. I was going to say it's like the wrapping paper that I use for anybody's gifts, that it's literally like, I hope to find a brown box and I will throw some mousse papers in there. And it doesn't look pretty, but I'm trying.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be Instagrammable.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God.
I was gonna say none of this is, unfortunately.
Right.
Again, that's just not, well, fortunately, but that's not how we're set up, and it's messing with people more.
Yeah. The last thing that I feel like I really want to tie around is just what you were saying about, like, I heard you say that what you've learned in your community culture at your gym, that you've like really taken it outside of the gym. And hearing that just is reminding me of my own path to fitness. I really like started on this journey towards self-care and knowing myself by becoming a personal trainer in 2012. And I had no idea that like I would come to this path of like learning about transmuting trauma and becoming a trauma-informed practitioner. But it's interesting what fitness does and being able to learn how to be comfortable in our bodies. And it gives us an opportunity to start to notice, how do I feel? Am I pushing myself too much? Like, what are my limits? And then you suddenly, when you're at home or whatever in your everyday life, you realize that you've built a skill to be able to check in with yourself. And you didn't even know that you were doing that. And that is part of like how we develop these skills and we heal through trauma. And I just am so fucking mind blown that like, it's like we can do that through movement. And now I'm on this huge mission to like break down the stigma and the barriers around movement that keep us from doing that just because of this. But yeah, thanks for just letting me bridge that real quick.
No, I, steps for that. I'm all there. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Christine, I appreciate you so much for coming on here and just chatting. And this has been a really, really lovely conversation.
Of course. I enjoyed it. I love talking to you. Conversations end up like this, so I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, seriously. We talk each other's heads off, like, we're just like talk, and then finally we're like, hey, I really think I'm gonna just like chill at bed and do nothing. Cool, me too. We're just on the same page. That's what I love about our friendship.
Yeah, it's like respecting the space of, okay, now I need to digest everything we just talked about.
Yes, big time. So for everybody listening, I'm gonna say, go do that. Turn this off. It's ending. Take a couple breaths. Maybe even like grab a journal and write down some notes for a plan for yourself for how you're going to take care of yourself. What's your support plan? I love that.
Yes.
All right. Signing off. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so very much for taking the time to tune into our conversation today. I hope that you're feeling empowered, fired up, inspired, and if you're really feeling like you want to dive a little deeper, don't forget I have plenty of free resources available to you on my website, as well as a handful now of online courses, including an online movement space that will be coming again, reopening this fall 2020. You can also sign up to have your own little candid conversation with me if you so desire, not recorded and in fact completely confidential. I offer self-care consults on a sliding scale, so you can feel free to check that out if you'd like some personalized, judgment-free lifestyle and stress management advice. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting me. And most of all, really, thank you so much for taking care of yourself. Yeah, let that sink in for a minute. Thank you for taking care of yourself. The world needs more people doing just that. Cheers to a conscious way of living, y'all, for ourselves, for our communities, and our planet. Until next time.